Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be in with you all. And if this is your first time listening to the program, well, gee whiz, where have you been for the last 13 years? The show's been around since November of 2013, entirely under the auspices of the Main Street Radio Network. So if you want to thank them for allowing this program to continue, go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. You'll find out more about the show, find podcasts for the show. And while you're there, you can check out the Al and Nathan Show podcast for that one as well. There at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Then there's also an app for Android users available at mainstreetradionetwork.com. We also are being distributed by the Salem Radio Network, so we want to give the big thanks to them for such distributions, whether it's to a radio station or to the online stream that is available on our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. It is all done courtesy of the Salem Radio Network at this point, so we appreciate that. Appreciate them very much. We're on social media too, which we handle ourselves. We don't have them distributing it there. But on social media, we can be found on Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio. And yeah, that's it. I mean, you can go to our third social media page, X at Al and Nathan, if you want to. But, you know, really, as far as what that has to do with this show, you'll just find out whenever I'm hosting the Al and Nathan show by following X at Al and Nathan. Anyway, we've had a wild week, haven't we? Those primaries, how about them primaries where these socialist candidates kept winning and then, well, one of them didn't, Cori Bush. She was laughable anyway. I'm surprised, though, that she lost, given the clean sweep Democrats have had, but her concession speech was something to behold, where she's saying, "I fight on behalf of the people against the elites, and the elites won today. Now you folks who have a black male congressman for Democrat candidate, yeah, you guys are not being represented by him. It would have been me, but not him. I'm for the people." But anyone might remember that this is the same person who, how long ago was it? 2021, 2022, when she was still in Congress, because she was in Congress before. Back when she was still in Congress, she was asked about her positions on wanting to abolish the police while having private security for herself. Her answer was, "Suck it up. I'm more important than you. I deserve protection. I face threats all the time. You out there who face threats all the time, screw you." That was her response when asked why she gets private security while she wants to abolish police for the rest of us. "You don't deserve protection. I do." She faces the same threats you and I face every day, but to her, that means that she actually deserves to be protected from them. You don't. I don't know if that really factored much into this, though, because her supporters tend to agree with such things. I mean, these leftists are nutso anyway. I mean, it's kind of funny, actually. I was reading right before the segment started about how on Wednesday, Fox News' Sean Hannity, he had this Democratic Socialist nominee, Chris Rabb, come onto the show to talk about his positions. And the guy is such an idiot. He says he wants to defund and abolish the police. The Founding Fathers don't have police. But then he also says that he wants there to be trained professionals to do law enforcement. Like, what? Isn't that what the police are? So he wants to abolish the police, but then put in the not police to do not police things. Just totally not the police, folks. It's totally not the police. Hypothetically, if the local police department changed their name to local law enforcement department, then would that suit him? Because that seems to be what he is going for, especially after being grilled by Sean Hannity saying, do you want to abolish prisons and abolish the police? That's what this guy responded with. And Sean Hannity also mentioning, you want to put the rapists and all murderers out there on the street. And this guy responded with, we need people trained to catch these folks. People like police, but not police. They don't really think these things through. They just catch on to a slogan and start chanting it. But then when it comes time for rubber to hit the road, everything goes out the window. And we're actually seeing that in many communities out there. Although, of course, they have this total lack of awareness about what's going on. Like, for example, I talked about on the Al Nathan show earlier this week how in Spain, the left-wingers, socialists opened up the borders because they wanted to. They were cheering it, But then when it turned out this was a terrible idea and you had this mob of 60,000 people storm in, well, suddenly the Spanish people are out there blaming Israel. Oh, it's Israel's fault. It's not our fault for opening our borders. You know, that's the socialist thing to do. That's the right thing to do. It's Israel's fault that people actually want to come into the country after we open our borders. Total inability to accept responsibility for their own actions. And we're also, it's not native to Spain, mind you. It's also happening here in the U.S. In fact, it happens anywhere left-wing policies fail. It's not our fault. You know, we didn't screw up. Our policy would have worked perfectly. Someone else did it. Israel did it. We'll blame the Jews. But in Chicago, though, they have something else going on. Read about a store closing recently, a Walgreens that's closed. And they ended up, the mayor of Chicago said that Walgreens would be prosecuted for creating a medicine drought by closing these stores. Well, here's the thing. The store was losing $1 million annually. That's a lot of money. And like, what, do these communities feel that they are privileged that, you're just losing $1 million at this one store in this one community. You can afford it. Well, how many other communities have that same attitude? Well, you can afford to lose money in this community. And the reason they're losing money is because retail theft. People keep coming in, stealing everything. And they spent $400,000 on security and still lost $1 million. That's a lot. But not to the Democrats. They want them to lose more. The mayor said that the Walgreens could be prosecuted for creating a medicine drought. Local residents who robbed the store and attacked employees are showing up with signs protesting that the store is closing. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you and then demanding more food from it. That's what the Democrats are doing there. And there's this absolute refusal to accept, yes, maybe we are to blame. Maybe the fact that we don't care that our people in our communities are robbing the store. Maybe the fact that we aren't doing anything about that. And the leadership, you know, instead of enforcing the law, they're just treating it as a lifestyle choice. Walgreens should be giving it out for free, apparently, according to them. So that, again, they set these policies and they just, when they go south, they don't do anything about it. They just, it's not our fault. It's someone else's fault. It's Walgreens' fault for pulling out of this community. They can afford to give everything away for free. And if Walgreens were to do everything for free, you know, they had a profitability of $150 billion. So, of course, they can give away everything for free. They can afford to lose $1 million here. Well, okay, what would happen to that profitability if they did just allow retail theft? Oh yeah, you can come into our store, steal everything you want. Well, now there's no profitability, is there? Because everything's getting stolen. I mean, would you pay if you were told, well, we accept retail theft here, you can steal whatever you like? Would you bother paying? I wouldn't. You know, what, you're going to pay out of charity to support the institution? Why would you? You're a sucker. But not according to Democrats. According to Democrats, it's a right. Theft is a right. This company has, and again, they're not thinking this through. What happens if everybody steals from Walgreens? Then there's no Walgreens left because that $150 billion of profitability is gone. When that goes away, the store goes away because you kept stealing from them. You kept stealing from them. There is no such thing as a free lunch. Everything has to come from something. And we were taught in, you know, basic science classes the law of conservation of mass. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. We learned that, what, in high school science classes? But then again, how many Democrats actually made it out of high school? Or perhaps they made it through high school in a system like Oregon's where you don't have to read, you don't have to write, you don't have to know how to do math. You just get a diploma the moment that you turn 18, apparently. That's how Oregon is doing it. And they said it's racist to do it any other way. So how many of these other school systems are doing the same thing? I mean, and I guess it's no surprise then that these folks who can't even read are out there saying, well, we're going to vote Democrat and we have no understanding of how profitability works. We have no understanding of how stores work. We think that they're just magic money creators. They're magic goodies creators because, well, gee whiz, I robbed the store and then suddenly it has more merchandise a few days from them that I can rob again. Therefore, there's no consequence to it. They must just get it from, I don't know, that they have a magician creating stuff in the back. That is the understanding liberals have. And these protesters out there demanding that Walgreens stay in business in their communities, and you know any other thing too. I've talked about either on this show or the Al Nathan show. CVS facing the same thing in other cities, where the communities rob them, make sure that the store is unprofitable, make sure that the store has no choice but to close down, and then those very same communities come out and say, "Oh well, you're the evil person for doing this. How dare you? How dare you not let us rob you? How dare you not let us attack your employees? How dare you leave our communities when we clearly didn't want you in the first place and just wanted to steal from you? How dare you take away our thieving opportunities?" And in the case of Chicago, the mayor is coming out and saying, "Well, we're going to prosecute you. We're not going to prosecute the burglars. We're not going to prosecute the people who beat your employees. We're going to prosecute you for daring to leave this community and not give away everything for free and not leave your employees out there for target practice." That's the Democrat policy, and that's what we're going to see nationwide if they get their way in the elections. More at Silker Joe Show after this break.
More bold flavor is headed to Circle K as the convenience chain expands its partnership with one of America's most recognizable celebrity chefs, Guy Fieri. Circle K and celebrity chef Guy Fieri are expanding their successful partnership, bringing an exclusive lineup of Flavortown-inspired menu items to nearly 450 Circle K locations across Arizona and Nevada this month. The menu features four crave-worthy creations available only at Circle K, including the mac and cheese burger, sweet heat fried chicken and waffle sandwich, chicken royale sandwich with Swiss and jalapeno, and the hearty all-American-inspired breakfast burrito. The expansion builds on last year's successful launch in 10 northern states, giving even more customers a chance to enjoy Guy Fieri's signature bold, off-the-hook flavors for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, all without leaving the convenience store. For the nearest participating Circle K location and the latest deals, visit the Circle K app or website.
This could be another year of extreme weather. Hi, I'm Dr. Jen Quammen, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Whether it's severe heat, storms, or forest fire smoke, it's important for pet owners to plan ahead. Here are some extreme weather tips. Check the forecast for severe weather in your area. On hot days, walk your dog early morning or at night and keep the air conditioning on at home with access to plenty of fresh water. Avoid intense outdoor activities when there's extreme heat or poor air quality. Never, ever leave your pet unattended in a car. Temperatures can rise within just a few minutes. Plan ahead with an evacuation plan and pet emergency kit, including several days' food, medicine, first aid kit, and toys. Have your pet's medical records on hand and be sure that they are properly identified and microchipped. Contact your veterinarian if you have questions. There's much more valuable pet information available at avma.org. That's avma.org.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. So in the last segment, I was talking about left-wing ideologues seeing their policies have devastating effects and blaming some others for what happens. Well, and I also dipped into education with that, the state of Oregon and their very, very loose standards where they practically just hand you a diploma when you turn 18. Now, the clock turned 18 must mean you need to graduate high school now, as if that would suddenly make you smart just having that sheet of paper. Well, going along the same vein of leftists not taking accountability, you have this piece over at The Atlantic, this journalist Idris Kaloun, and of course everyone knows that The Atlantic, the leftist propaganda rag, I mean, they're the ones who started that whole myth that President Trump said that fallen soldiers were suckers and losers based on a single anonymous source that they refused to give up, and that's how that whole myth started, from The Atlantic's single anonymous source that could have honestly just been the voices in the head of the journalist who published the article. So The Atlantic has this piece out titled, "America is Sliding Toward Illiteracy, Declining Standards and Low Expectations are Destroying American Education." Perhaps this author published this piece after seeing how left-wing states like California were actually doing worse in education outcomes than some of the conservative states that left-wingers love to make fun of in their elitist way. Anyway, joining us to talk about this, we have Richard Lyons. He is a Middle East historian, third-generation printer, screenwriter, and author of The DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis. Richard Lyons, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
No, great being with you, Joe.
I'm glad to have you. So what's your take on this?
Well, the Democrat Party has taken over, essentially, the education of the country since the LBJ presidency, through the teachers' unions and through controlling the curriculum, and they have run it into the ground. Prior to that time, Joe, in America, it was parents who controlled education in this country. What we've seen with socialist control since LBJ's time, and particularly since Obama made the federal government the 100% institutional monopoly of the financial system of higher education. In other words, if you need a loan to go to a university, and the price of university now is so high you have to, it's a government investment in the curriculum of universities. And that curriculum has been hollowed out so that many people who graduate from universities now are deeply ignorant as to different forms of government and what they mean.
Well, it's not just deeply ignorant to civics in general, but just deeply ignorant in general.
Something like what? For work.
What was it, like 1 in 3, 1 in 4 of people who start college or who graduate high school are illiterate, and these people are going to college at such low levels that colleges spend a lot of time just trying to bring them up to speed.
Yes, and it's with a continuous degradation of standards, whether it's in grade school, whether it's in high school, right, Joe, whether it's in university. And you can literally get a degree and graduate with a degree that prepares you for nothing in the real world. Mm-hmm. And it's just staggering. In the 1800s, Joe, de Tocqueville went on a tour of the country here and pronounced that the farmers in America had a better education than the aristocrats of Europe, because we cared about education because it was locally done, and we got to get back to caring about what our kids are taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems to be this idea that that we've had inculcated in us that we can just shove the kids into the education system and watch them come out smart.
Yeah, they'll be taken care of, right? They'll be taken care of. Wrong. Yeah, wrong. They'll be indoctrinated.
Yeah, and we figure that because we dump so much taxpayer money into it, I mean, gee whiz, on the local news around where I'm at, they're talking about creating a new tax to go into the education system in these school systems that are like very, very, very low in rankings in the nation. And I guess the assumption is, well, we pay so much, why aren't we getting the outcomes?
Exactly. We actually pay in America twice as much per pupil for education than they do in the next nearest developed country.
Wow.
And what we're getting is half of the success. And it's because education has been taken over by people who literally have no association with common sense reality. If you look at a college campus, Nobody on a college campus that's a professor is worried about making a living. No administrator is worried about making a living. It's because they're little, they are little bubbles we're in. It's a different reality because we all pay for that.
And we've seen that this put to the test, practically speaking, where states that teach to what the college professors would want your kid to learn. Oh, they don't need to learn math or writing. They need to learn all the genders and all the history of oppression in the United States. Well,
exactly.
Those school systems are the ones that are failing, whereas school systems like it's Mississippi. It was Mississippi that ended up topping the charts, and it's because they took that stuff out and focused on what people actually need to learn.
Exactly. It and that was what was wonderful, Joe, if I can go back, about the 1800s. You're talking about students that came off the farm or came in from the merchant in town and had to learn the math necessary to their work. It was geared towards what work would be for the rest of their lives. And now it's about this fantasy that socialism somehow is going to grant everybody a heaven that has never existed before. And it's all BS.
Well, I guess as far as the left is concerned, it is, their education is for the work for the rest of their lives, because they're going to be out there protesting and voting so they can get free handouts. And, of course, those free handouts are their livelihood.
A tenured professor, no doubt.
Right. Yeah, tenured professor, welfare queen, whatever.
But no, they're going into a job. Literally, Joe, you're exactly right. They're going into a job for which there is no expectation. Mm-hmm. Nobody grades professors on how they're doing, and we should.
Mm-hmm. Right. Those people out there perpetually stuck in the university system, and then they're the ones who decide the curriculums, and then somehow we still have this idea in the country that these very same professors are learned and we should follow them, trust the experts and all of that. And,
yes,
of course,
exactly.
We've seen where that leads.
Well, we've seen Fauci. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be Mr. Science.
Right.
And he spent his time hiding the truth, which is what the whole professorial class in this country does when they denigrate this nation and promote socialism. They are lying to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems that their idea of what equal outcomes should be under socialism is everyone is equally as ignorant. Again, citing the state of
exactly.
Oregon with their
equally
failed system.
Equally miserable, equally poor, equally stupid.
Mm-hmm. Of course, not themselves.
Yep.
They're taking the money from
not
the government.
They
get
they're,
a look they're down
on the
your
inside.
Nose.
Right, they're on the inside. And we pay them to be there. That's the thing. They're not paid by results. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and we see that in our school systems as well, thanks to the unions, where teachers can do some atrocious things and still be in the classroom the next day because you don't want to piss off the union, which instead of... why would the union protect terrible teachers that are in California? They had this problem where teachers would be molesting students. They just get shuffled to another school system and the union would try to quiet things down. Why are they tolerating
exactly.
this stuff?
No, exactly. And it is the success of ignorance, the success of insider playing. They're protecting their own. It's really, we got to straighten it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Richard Lyons, appreciate you joining the show. Where can the listeners get copies of your books, The DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis? About 10 seconds left.
They should go to thednaofdemocracy.com. They can even download a free copy of the first volume about our country for free because of the 250th anniversary.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And listeners, check out during the break.
If you're one of the millions of Americans traveling with pets, it's a great idea to plan ahead. Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Bailey, past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Before you take off on vacation, think about a visit to your veterinarian to make sure your pet is current on all vaccinations and medications. Here are some tips for smoother travel. Pack all your pet's needs, including extra water, medication, pet carrier, toys, and first aid kit. On road trips, offer your pet water, exercise, and bathroom breaks, and never, ever leave your pet alone in a parked car. In dog-friendly hotels, be considerate of other guests. Keep your dog on a leash. If flying with your pet, contact your airline about their pet travel policies before you arrive at the airport. Check with your veterinarian. Make sure your pet is fit for travel, and think about boarding if there's a chance they might not be comfortable. There's more valuable pet information at avma.org.
This report is sponsored by IBM. A new study from the IBM Institute for Business Value reveals a growing disconnect between executive perceptions of AI progress and employee experience. Executives report AI-driven role change at twice the rate employees experience it. 81% say AI skills are rewarded, yet 43% of employees lack employer AI training, and 50% say AI obscures contributions. Aparna Nair, IBM's Chief Talent, Leadership, and Culture Officer.
The organizations that will lead in this era won't just be the ones with the best AI. They'll be the ones that invest equally in their workforce, making it clear when to trust or challenge the system, strengthening how managers coach decisions, and rewarding employees for using AI responsibly, not just using it quickly.
The study finds that organizations most likely to stand out redesign workflows, enable managers to coach effectively, clarify decision-making, and align incentives alongside AI adoption. These organizations could see up to 73% higher revenue growth and an 11% operating margin advantage over their peers. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV.
Essential tremor and Parkinson's disease are progressive movement disorders that can interfere with daily activities, and symptoms can significantly impact quality of life. To share more, here is movement disorder specialist and behavioral neurologist, Dr. Philip Tipton.
I'm working with Boston Scientific to raise awareness of deep brain stimulation, or DBS, as a treatment option for essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. DBS works by sending mild electrical signals to a targeted portion of the brain through a small implanted device called a stimulator. These signals can help improve movement symptoms associated with Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Boston Scientific's Versice Genus Deep Brain Stimulation System is an FDA-approved treatment option for Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Talk to your doctor about the risks and benefits of deep brain stimulation and if it's the right option for you.
Learn more about Boston Scientific DBS therapy by visiting dbsandme.com. This message is brought to you by Boston Scientific.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be in with you all. And boy, what a crazy batch of Democrat candidates we've had. Didn't I talk about them during the opening segment just a little bit? Yeah, but then I kind of pivoted. But this whole hour we've been talking about their ineptitude and their attempts to deflect, and we're about to see more of it. No, it wasn't last week on this show. It was on the Alan Nathan show. I was talking about how, you know, they have these policies out there as far as education, or not education, gee whiz. My brain is mixing things together right now into a nice stew. So in the opening segment, we were talking about how the policies Democrats have end up affecting the poor in their communities, right? The the stores, the CVSs, the Walgreens that have to close down because Democrats refuse to enforce any kind of law and order. Thus, these stores have to close because they're not making any money. They're losing a lot of money. And, of course, the company can't have a business model based on people giving away stuff for free. Because also, it's not like someone's just going to come in and grab one item and walk out. No. These people come in, steal everything they can carry, and then sell it on the black market. That's what happens. Or they just steal a little for themselves, too, of course. That happens as well. So the Democrats, they have that idea that, we're helping the community by creating this environment where stores can't operate. Well, they did that. That's happening in New York City now as well. They have this idea, well, we're going to help the community by making it so that grocery stores can't operate because we're going to create these government-run grocery stores, and it's going to be food's going to be sold at such a discount that it's going to undercut all the competition, including the people we claim to want to help, the immigrants who own businesses here. So, like, immigrant store owners, they can't compete with a city-owned store. The city-owned store is going to be selling stuff at 30% rate cut there. So what are these immigrant store owners going to do? They can't sell that low. Stores only make, like, a 1% or 2% profit. So if you cut your prices by 30%, you're practically might as well just give everything away for free. You're not going to be in business for very long. So that's it's not like it's all the evil rich white people like Walgreens or CVS. No, these are local community members, and they are hiring and creating local jobs. Although, then again, CVS and Walgreens were creating local jobs, and the employees, all they got for it was being beaten and brutalized by the communities that they're being hired from. And then those same communities come out and say, how dare you close the store? Sure, we'll rob from the store, we'll beat our own community members who are in the store, but how dare you not let us do that? And then the city comes in and with Mayor Brandon Johnson and says, well, you know, this is helping the community by letting them rob the store and attack community members. So we need to just let that continue. And you're the bad person for not encouraging retail theft and assaulting employees. You're the bad person for wanting people to feel safe and wanting to have a functional society. And now in New York City, you know, there's been, oh, we're going to help the community by eliminating jobs. We're going to help the community by eliminating the availability of local stores and concentrating them all into one or two city-owned stores. There's going to be breadlines for this from this stuff. Because what's going to happen is the city, of course, can't afford any of this crap anyway. It's all a fiction. But in the meantime, they're going to end up eliminating the local stores because, well, they... During the time that these city-ran stores are going to be propped up, the local-ran stores, they're not going to be able to compete. And that might be long enough to force them to close because they just couldn't compete, couldn't stay profitable, so out you go, sorry. And consequently, more jobs will be lost, and thus will be the need for more city-ran stores because, well, now you have more poor people who can't afford groceries, so you need more affordable groceries. And... it's going to be a perpetuating cycle, and there's not going to be a bailout, and of course you're not going to have enough stores, city-ran stores, to keep up with the demand, so you're going to have bread lines. But it's all done in the name of helping the poor. We're going to eliminate opportunities for them, but it's to help them. In the end, it's to help them. You're just too ignorant to understand how this all works. Such a patronizing attitude, but what do you expect? All of this is coming down from wealthier folks who are tucking down to the lower ones. I look at the composition of the DSA, for example, largely wealthy white people. So the I was wondering about Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's wealth. It turns out his wealth is actually not very well known. We know he makes $220,000 as mayor, though. So certainly he can afford to be kind of out of the loop, so to speak, the same elitist attitude. His pensions are worth an estimated $3.8 million. After only 4 years as a teacher and one term as a mayor, his pensions are worth $3.8 million. So he's one of those elitists out there. He's not affected by any of this. He doesn't care. He's not going to live in those communities. I mean, look at Kamala Harris as well. Just popped into my head how she moved into a largely white neighborhood recently. You know, after all of her talk about racial grievances and stuff like this, after trying to pander to that section of the left, she moves into a white neighborhood. But then again, look at what happened to Carmelo Anthony's family. Oh, those poor people, they were forced to move into a gated white community, despite claiming that they're experiencing so much racism and trying to profit so much on this claim of racism, they move into a white neighborhood. what are they going to beard the lion in its den, or do they think that the best place to hide is the place that you least suspect that they'd be hiding in? What's the reasoning for this, unless everything they say is BS and their real goal is to just profiteer off of all this stuff? But anyway, that is, again, it's the kind of Democrat socialist attitude on display here, this elitist attitude. We're going to lie through our teeth and make all this in order to get all this nice stuff for ourselves, and eventually it's going to end up screwing you over, you know, you who donated to us, you who voted for us, you who actually might need some of the stuff that we're talking about doing, but we're going to do it so badly, and then we're just going to blame you when it fails. We're going to blame something else when it fails. We're going to blame everything except our policy itself when it fails. But isn't that the nature of socialism to begin with? Look at all these countries that socialism has failed in. Socialism the way that our Democrats want it. You know, they say, oh, well, there's socialism in other countries that works. But then when you look at it, they actually had to, you know, some of the places they cite, they had to walk back from the policies that the left is claiming are functional. Or if they are currently employed, they're an absolute disaster. I mean, look at universal health care, for example. You know, they say, well, Canada and England, that's a socialist system that works with their universal health care. Well, no, it doesn't. In fact, England, part of the reason why they're bankrupt almost as a country, why their average citizen has less income than the poorest state in the United States on average, part of the reason for that is because of their healthcare system. Part of the reason why they can't maintain their military is because of their healthcare system. That thing, what sank the British Empire, it seems, was implementing their universal healthcare system. And then now, what do you get for it? You get a doctor who barely speaks English and cannot properly diagnose you and blames you for any faults that happen. And you also get excessive and extreme wait times. I mean, you might as well, you know, you'll have to book your appointment a couple of months in advance, and if you have an emergency, forget about it. You'll be dead by the time they get around to you. You know, We have socialized medicine in the United States, believe it or not. It's called the Veterans Affairs healthcare system. And boy, does anyone remember what happened with that under Obama? The wait lists where people died waiting? None of that really went away. It went out of the headlines. The Trump administration kind of did something about it, but it was still popping up. It's just, we just don't talk about it anymore, but it's still an issue. And that's just with one section of socialized medicine that we've tried in the U.S. But what about Canada? Oh, they must be, maybe they're successful. Yeah, to keep costs down, they're recommending euthanasia for like everything. If you get seasonal depression, they have started recommending euthanasia for that. If you have mental illness of some kind, if you're born with something, a chronic condition, they're recommending euthanasia. They are absolutely into that. It saves money. And it's all about the bottom line, keeping yourself fiscally solvent. The death panels that we said that would happen with Obamacare, they're happening with the Canadian healthcare system. In fact, they're happening with the socialized medicine overseas. Everyone remembers what happened with Alfie Evans, where the European Union healthcare system decided, well, this little child deserves to die. We're not going to treat them. And we're going to forbid the parents from, on their own dime, getting the kid treatment elsewhere. Because we know better. We're the experts. We have our death panels. So we're going to make sure this person dies. And the, according to the left, that is a functional healthcare system where either they'll recommend euthanasia for the least thing in order to keep it profitable, and where if you think you can get treatment outside of the system, forget it. They're going to prevent you from doing that using legal power. And if you even try to get treatment within the system, you'll have excessive wait times. That's what, so much so that you might die while waiting to get whatever treatment you need. That's what liberals think a successful socialist healthcare system looks like. So, Is it any wonder that their idea of success when they implement their policies tends to be a little bit less than what the average person might have, and why they keep defending their policies the way they do? More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
What was going on?
Okay, we need to get out of here.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
Move.
What?
Move.
Okay.
Move.
Stakes are high in the season finale of Patience, the hit British crime series that captivated viewers this summer on PBS. The thrilling season comes to a dramatic close this Sunday night, and all episodes are available on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video. Patience follows an autistic criminal records clerk named Patience Evans, who uses her unique analytical skills to solve murder cases. In the season finale, Patience and D.I. Monroe are held hostage by an escaped prisoner seeking justice, and time is running out. Patience joins PBS's extensive catalog of mysteries. From beloved classics to newer hits, there's a mystery around every corner, and mystery loves company. Don't miss the season finale of Patience this Sunday at 8 p.m. 7 Central on PBS. And stream the entire series on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video.
When 17-year-old Chris Meyer came home sick, his parents thought he was coming down with the flu. A day later, the high school senior died from meningococcal meningitis. His mother, Leslie, is sharing his story to help avoid similar tragedies.
I never knew there was an infection that could kill a healthy child in less than 24 hours, but meningococcal meningitis can do that. Meningitis spreads through respiratory droplets, so being around other kids, sharing water bottles, and kissing can transmit the disease. I didn't know that a vaccine may have helped to prevent my family's tragedy. In honor of my son Chris, I'm raising awareness about meningococcal vaccination so other families don't go through what we did.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends two doses of the MenACWY vaccine, the first at age 11 or 12, and a booster at age 16 when teens are at highest risk for meningococcal disease, which can be unpredictable and potentially devastating. This back-to-school season, discuss the importance of vaccination with your child's healthcare team. This message is sponsored by Sanofi.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe with you all today. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program, and we're wrapping up now with Dr. Jeffrey Rubin. He teaches at the Object Relations Institute of New York, the American Institute of Psychoanalysis, and the C.G. Jung Institute of New York. He is considered one of the leading integrators of the Western psychotherapeutic and Eastern meditative traditions. Dr. Rubin, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
I'm good, Joseph.
I'm glad to have you. So we're talking now about, this phenomenon called dateflation. The price of dating has, and particularly first dates, that seem to be very expensive. Boy, I can vouch for that. But what are you seeing?
I'm seeing the same thing. And, you know, as everybody's being squeezed except the super wealthy, finances become crucial in all parts of our lives, including dating. Dating is no exception. And I think many singles are substituting walks in the park, coffee, hanging out, free concerts for expensive dinners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've seen it personally that, you know, some people I think that are out there just getting free meals from their first dates and then leaving at that, which the fact that I don't know if people have probably been doing that for all history, but, you know, in today, it kind of makes sense economically that you would do that. And maybe, you know, you make a new partner along the way, maybe not, but at least you got the free meal from them.
Exactly. And, you know, I was thinking about that and whether I would say that today, but that's what I hear from men. I've heard that for years from men. One of the ways to look at this, Joseph, is the unexpected opportunity within the change. And the opportunity is to have direct presence with someone without the performative aspect of the fancy restaurant and the atmosphere. You can really get to know the person better.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I've noticed that, you know, when you go in and dine, there seems to be a set limit to that, a set routine, and maybe you'll talk a little bit, chat a little bit, but then if that's it, that's it. I mean, if it's at dinner, for example, then are you really going to want to take a walk around the neighborhood at night later on afterwards? No, you probably got work the next day. So all you do is that hour and a half or so that you're eating, and then that's it, you're done.
That's right. And it covers over a lot of things that get revealed if you take a walk through the park. Does mm-hmm. the person listen? Do they interrupt? Do you feel comfortable with them? A lot of that can reveal itself. The genuine compatibility can reveal itself sometimes more easily if there are no props around.
Right. And certainly, and even at dinners, you might end up being more focused on the food and the environment as opposed to actually focused on getting to know each other. Because, I mean, part of the ritual of going out to eat is you have to look at the menu to know what you're going to want. So if you're spending half the time looking at the menu and eating, then you've already lost a good portion of the time that you could be bonding.
Exactly. And sometimes the guys feel pressure, like, I have to keep it up at this level. And then if I can, or if I lose my job, I'm let go of, there's secret shame. So there's a whole shadow side to the old way of dating that we don't think enough about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also see people in their profiles, too, saying don't put up an energy that you can't match, which basically means, I guess, if you can't take me out to a fancy dinner every night, then don't take me out to a fancy dinner the first date. Don't make it look like you can do what you can't do.
Exactly. And then the guy, on the other hand, feels, well, I mean, it can be the woman, too, but feels a secret pressure to keep it up. And then they're not getting to know each other in a relaxed way. It doesn't optimize for really getting to know the person. It optimizes for putting on a good performance, and then you feel pressure to keep doing that.
Yeah. So at what point really did going out for a fancy dinner become the standard for a first date sort of thing? I mean, to me, it seems like you know, just from a practical standpoint, why would I dump so much money on someone who I don't even know if I'll see ever again?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's hard. Some of these trends are hard to see, and they may differ in different parts of the country. But we see that pressure often to make it a special performance instead of what it should be, getting to see if you really want to be together. Do you feel safe with the person? Can you open up with them? Do they listen? Are you excited about seeing them again? All that gets hidden when the focus becomes the performance.
Right, and especially if it happens to be a particularly good meal, because then you might have the wrong association. You might be thinking more about the enjoying the food as opposed to enjoying the company.
Right, and then the next time you have to make another great choice, and it, where does it end? The other thing that's often not talked about is it sets up a one-sided precedent in a relationship of the relationship is you doing for me instead of both of us being in here together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if I see a lot of profiles that seem to indicate people who want that sort of precedent to be established, but no reciprocation, and what's that going to mean when you're finally reaching later stages of the relationship? Is it just going to be one person carrying the whole thing?
Yes, and what you've done is set the precedent that that's normal, that's okay, and you accept that instead of no, you really want it to be a reciprocal, two-sided, equal relationship.
Yeah, because no matter how idealized relationships have been, usually there is some give and take. I mean, even when we're told back during the 1950s, the woman's the housewife doing everything at home. Well, the husband was giving as well. He was working his butt off at work all day to make sure that there was a home to have.
Yeah, and then each doesn't appreciate those aspects of what the other does. They focus on the performance, the mm-hmm. great date.
Right, and when you're being performative, you're not being genuine. So, are you just going to spend the rest of your life being performative? At what point are you going to decide to try and reveal or achieve something that you would be more comfortable with? And then when that happens, inevitably it's going to be a letdown because you're not being that high standard that you already set.
Exactly. And then there's a pressure to hold that up, and there's a fear it'll be revealed, and then also you don't know, does the person love your heart or they love what you provide for them financially?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And women could earn more than the guy. I don't mean to imply it's only men doing this with women. It can go in both directions, obviously. But the wealthier person doesn't know, do you really care about me or do you care about what I give you?
Yeah, that's certainly a significant obstacle. And if that is the foot that you start on, at what point then in the relationship, how do you know that you can trust the other person? And how do you, because like if you suddenly stop providing all those fancy things, if suddenly that drops out, will the other person just, if they say they still love you, is that because they know what you're capable of and are just waiting for that to resume? Or is it because they're being genuine?
Exactly. So I'll often tell people, don't lead with that. I call it the emotional millionaire next door. It's the same thing with always being understanding, always being empathic. You want to make sure the person's interested in you apart from what you provide for them, emotionally, financially, et cetera. Do they really want you?
All right. Well, Dr. Rubin, appreciate you joining us to talk about this. Real quick, where can I also find more of your work? We've got about 20 seconds left for you to tell us.
Sure. DrJeffreyRubin.com. Books, talks, feel free to reach out and contact me. It's not an imposition. And I wish you all well. And see if you can date differently and really get to know the person.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. Wishing you well, too. And listeners, wishing you all well as we wrap up this hour of the Silker Joe Show this weekend. Of course, our website is MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.